No, you don't need to do it again, but we're recording now.
All right, with that, we have a first order of business that may not correspond to our agenda.
Yes, I think we have an appellant here who wants to be heard on a timeframe, and so I suggest we do that first. However, I would like everybody to kind of go around and introduce themselves, since it's the first meeting with new members. I'll start. I'm Donna Goddard. I'm the program manager for code enforcement and animal control here in Clark County.
I am Russ Anka. I am the program coordinator for animal control.
I'm Rebecca Halliday.
I'm Rebecca Rodriguez, and I'm new.
I'm Kyle Schicchetti. No domestic animals. Cherry.
I'm Robert Couch. I've been on the board a couple of years. Vice chair, I think. Yeah, so.
I'm Tara Engvall. I'm a livestock advisor. I've been here like 2 years.
And online? You're on mute.
Sorry about that technology. I am Tara Sporco. I am new-ish, and I'm an advisor for animal welfare.
Kat Meister, new also, and I'm the dog owner person.
I'm Jackie. I'm the office assistant for animal control, and I'm the one you're probably going to see a lot of emails from.
The appellant is here. Which case is that?
Darren Rousseau.
Okay, so I think we can get started with him. Again, I just advise you, there's no deciding whether there's any guilt or innocence. These folks have admitted guilt, and we're looking at reduction in fines, whether they're appropriate and how much to reduce them. So that'll be your charge.
So can we ask them questions based on their presentation?
Sure.
Like if we had questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when you're starting them with the proposition first?
Yes. So it'll kind of like a typical hearing. I'll just give rolling bridges and maps of what the county has and have them roll into it on there.
And Clark's still is getting
Oh, I've got to talk to everybody. I might as well go all up to the front.
There you go.
Why don't you have a seat in one of those chairs over there?
I like the pedestal here. I feel all important.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I got a dog in the
Hold on, Mr. Rousseau. My name is Kyle Schicchetti. I'm the chair of the committee. Typically, we would start with animal control. They would make their presentation, and then you'll have an opportunity to address the board. And then we may have some questions. So if you want to stand up,
that's fine. We'll go right ahead with the procedure.
Yes, we'll turn it over to Russ first, and then we'll hear from you.
Okay. So there's a brief history going back to 2019 of the dogs from this property running at large. The most recent one was reported on June 2nd. That the neighbor's black and white collie dog was continually running at large down a shared driveway. Officer Estes responded and spoke with the reporting party, who stated they leave their gate open to their property, letting the dog run at large on a shared driveway. Numerous other residents have advised that the dog will aggressively chase the vehicle and try to jump on it and bark. They've had many problems with the dog, and they have started to carry mace, and on one occasion, or multiple occasions, they have mace dog several times. Officer Estes advised the owners to get a picture, or the reporting people to get pictures or video evidence to submit to us, which she did obtain, and then issued a citation for the dog running at large and I believe vicious behavior. Chasing cars and vicious behavior were the two county ordinances that she had cited for.
I have a question. Was the dog license after the presentation?
Yes.
Thank you.
And what are the fines?
It would be county is two. I'm sorry.
250.
It is 250. I just wanted to, I was going back in time to make sure. Yes, it's 250 per violation. So it's a $500 total violation.
Okay.
That's minus the licensing.
Minus the licensing. The licensing was corrected within that 10-day window.
Yeah, I jumped on that.
So that is automatically withdrawn.
Yep. Very good.
All right. Before we, is it Mr. Purcell?
Yes.
Before we turn it over to Mr. Purcell, does anybody on the floor have any questions for Mr. Anka?
I have a question about the driveway. Is the driveway a mutual driveway for both residents?
Yes.
So essentially, the dog was in his own driveway as well as the neighbor's driveway, is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the technical issues that we do face on occasion. We did have a dangerous dog hearing most recently where there was a shared road, which is the same thing as a shared driveway. They were trying to claim that the they had owned the easement. Turns out that the hearings examiner dug into that investigation, found out that, you know, it does not apply to that circumstance. Everybody has the same equal opportunity to use that road and not be molested or accosted by any animals running at large. So whether it's FedEx, UPS, you know, they going on, as long as it's not marked no trespassing onto a specific piece of property, that would be the only indication. And even then, there's still that reasonable expectation of privacy.
Thank
so
you.
That's
any other questions?
I have another question, actually. I remember reading this, and I mentioned something about macing the dog. So was there any other behavior that would antagonize the dog to further go after people who would have maced the dog? Because I'm not saying, no one wants to have a dog jump on them or bother them or bite them or knock them down or anything. However, when you have a situation that may have built for a while, you can find an animal reacting to that negativism towards them. So I wanted to know if there was any word about that type of a continued macing or a continued
the aggressive tendencies.
Yes.
Didn't start showing up until the fire was all running at large, and then there was a bite that occurred, but it was inside the residence, if I remember correctly.
I remember.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was all my questions. I appreciate that.
Anybody else?
I have a question, actually. So,
who's talking?
When I read the materials, I read that there were at least two bites, one to a hand that broke the skin and one to the back of a leg. And also the dog was attacking children. I don't know the nature of those, but can you clarify any details of those?
Yeah, the one bite that I did read broke skin. The other one did not break skin, so that was not classified as a bite.
Oh.
So we didn't pursue anything from that one. The
oh.
one that actually broke skin, I believe, was another minor that was brought into the home as a friend of one of the children that resided there. And that bite occurred.
Okay. Ms. Neiser, do you have any other questions?
Well, I guess I wondered what the justification for lowering the fine is. I didn't read any reasoning for that.
So we're asking questions of Mr. Anka and Mr. Brissau, or so we'll have an opportunity to address you shortly.
And realistically, the prior history is not as much relevant as the particulars of the date and time that the incident was cited for. I only addressed the prior history because I believe that it's stated on the back of the appeals form that this was the first incident.
All right. So we turn this over to Mr. Purcell.
You kind of whooped right now. I got some bad dogs all of a sudden. Boy, they eat kids and chew everybody up. Yeah, the only reason I'm down here is to actually get the fine lowered. I know my dogs have gotten out. There's a lot of different reasons why this went on. It's very unfortunate with new neighbors. I've been in that residence for over 12 years. Got some new neighbors that came in. They're from a different state. They don't know what battleground is. But anyways, I've got them. One of the circumstances after this happened, it seemed like I kind of kept an eye on them back there and realized that Dad had bought them new motorcycles. And these little mini bikes tend to go down the road back and forth. Well, that I think was what was probably attracting the dog's attention to them. By the stories I'm hearing, these dogs are very vicious and they attack quite a few people. So I'm not going to get into that. Anyways, yeah, the mace, the dog's kind of messed up now. He had broke his back about a month before that. I'd take him into Amaziah. He ruptured a disc in his spine and paralyzed his back legs for about a week. And he doesn't get around too good anymore. So that was one of the, you know, but it does something to his head too. He's a little more angrier now because he can't go to the bathroom like a boy dog. He can't chew on fleas like he used to. He's a different dog. Since this has happened, the gates are closed. It's a pain in the rear, but I do it just out of respect for safety for other people. There's no way I'd want to harm any of my neighbors. If I don't get along with them, that's one thing, but there's absolutely no way I'm going to put anybody in any type of danger. I'd euthanize a dog before that. They're not that special. They're pets. The reports here state, you know, they're pretty bad, and I'm kind of negligent. I don't really seem to get the message here. The only thing is I spoke to a gal who was back in 19, I think, before Corona, and she'd come to the house. I had, again, got new neighbors close to me, and they're in the process of having a huge family. So there's lots of little babies running around and stuff, and that was one of their concerns, is I have dogs. I have cow dogs. You know, so I put all new fences in the front. Fixed everything so that the dogs would never get out, because that upsets me. I don't want to have dogs when I'm gone that can get out and hurt somebody. You know, that I'd go crazy. There's no sense in having animals if they're going to do that. I'm not a negligent man. I take a lot of pride in where I live and my neighbors around me. Yeah, this is a very unfortunate thing. You know, I've got new neighbors now that probably won't talk to for quite a few years, you know, and we're halfway close to each other, you know, and they were really nice people before this. I thought, great, I finally got good neighbors. It's going to take me some time, you know, looking at my dog twitching at night when I'm watching TV is not really too cool. I don't know if it's from the mace or from the spinal injury. But anyways, I'm just here. I got spanked with a really big ticket here. And I thought, my goodness, that's a big one. I never knew that dog tickets were that much. Right? I've never had a ticket in my life for a dog. So anyways, that was the whole reason I'm here, to see about getting it reduced a tad bit. You know, it's a win-win. I've already got the licensing off, so I'm a happy guy. Unless you guys want to help me out a little bit more, I'd appreciate that. And you'll never see me again. So... thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming down and taking the necessary steps to,
you know, it's super important to me.
Yeah. And the advisory board members will obviously make their decision on that. I don't have the authority to make that decision. I'm animal control, but the board will
sure
take that into consideration.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, when I got it, was like, wow, this is a big surcharge to say, like a traffic ticket. Holy smokes. You know, $800 is what I was looking at.
The cost of operations is skyrocketed across the board. And even that does not necessarily cover the cost of us going out there doing the job, making.
Oh yeah, bids. Sure. So there's a lot of running around with nothing reimbursed.
Yeah. We'd be lucky if we were, you know, net zero at the end of the day, but that's not how we operate. So
sure.
Again, thank you for coming down.
Okay. That's it for me.
We should be in touch with you.
Can I ask one clarification? So you put a new gate on, and then when you drive in your driveway, you have to get out and move the gate, come in. And
yes, sir. I have quite a few gates and doors I have through the gates.
That's a big effort. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what we do. We want to keep people safe. So. All right.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
And do we have another lined up, or should we just go through all, how many we have, four or five?
There's nobody else in person, so.
Yeah, I don't have an agenda in front of me. I don't know what else was, but yes, we can totally go through the rest of them.
Will any of the other ones be?
No.
The only one that requested to come down to speak in person. The rest of all either submitted a written statement or have provided some sort of.
I might make a suggestion that you take this one and come up with a decision. And if you can't come up with a decision now, then, like I said, you know, I think we limited to a week to get back something, some consensus. But I think if we, you know, just talked about what just happened and can come to an agreement, that would probably be best.
All right. So let's open it up to discussion.
Yep. I do feel like he makes a good effort to, with the gates. I have to open two sets of gates to go into my place. So I totally sympathize. I have to do it. It sucks in the rain, in the 95-degree heat. It sounds like he's doing it and probably going to stick to doing it. So, I mean, I feel like he's learned his lesson, for sure.
Yeah, and I think it took a lot for him to come down here, you know, and hat in hand and ask for, you know, some consideration. And, you know, the fact that he took all of those steps to remedy and, you know, and also looking at the additional information about the dog, that there was a recent injury, and then you have kind of like the mace. The mace is like, that's like
traumatizing.
Extreme. That's like a really extreme response. And, you know, mind you, you know, if you're being attacked, there is that. So, yeah, that could, I mean, I think that that could certainly lead to further aggression towards the people, like, oh my gosh, there's those people that that hurt me, you know.
Hurting breeds too.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I totally understand too with the new neighbors coming in. It's hard. I mean, he needs to keep this dog on his property, but herding breeds are harder to manage.
Yeah.
For sure.
Especially because they go a really good point with that shared driveway kind of thing of like, but that was resolved in another.
Yeah.
Okay.
The precedent has been set with our hearings examiner, and he actually, and I don't have any of that with me, it was a good question, but he cited other case law that actually showed that, you know, that consideration is basically nullified when people have a reasonable expectation of safety. So.
Sure.
And that's why I asked you, just for the legal point of it, because when he had previous neighbors, so the dog may have gone out in the mutual driveway with the other neighbors.
He probably knew that. And now we have people who are riding over his territory.
So I was trying to get the motivation of what the dog might have been behaving and why. And he seems very willing to cooperate and try to go out of his way to make things resolve. So I felt good about that.
Sounds like he's a farmer.
And it's the first time, too. So.
First citation. Yeah, I mean, we had documented history going back to 2019 with the dogs running at large, so it's not just with these neighbors, it's with prior neighbors as well. And then the two instances where somebody was supposedly attacked, very minor injury to the one that was actually a bite. The other one, I think, was more on the back of a leg, typical heeler type. It did not cause any punctures, so that was not classified as a true bite. So, I, you know, the advice board's discretion.
I have a proposal. Okay. So, since he handled the licensing in the appropriate amount of time, that's our goal to get everybody in compliance with that. So, we're really looking at the 550, and pursuant to all the other things we've looked at, when people were really willing to try to resolve the problem and take responsibility. We've usually cut that in half. Mm-hmm. I would remote make that proposal if that'd be okay.
All right. So we have a formal motion.
Sure. I move that we take the remaining balance and knock it off by 50%.
Do I have a second?
I second.
All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No. I don't agree. So I own a cattle dog and a border collie, and because there are the children that are involved, and it has escalated, and there has been a prior incident, I understand my herding dogs as well will chase cars, they will chase children. If the dog is still getting out of the fence, then there needs to be something more to ensure that the dogs are secured and away from the children. That's great that he's working with his neighbors in identifying the behaviors that maybe the children are inciting with the dog. I agree, mace is extreme, but a parent will do what they can to protect their child. But I would say, I think 50% is extremely generous. I would say, I would probably just knock it off by 20%, because chasing the cars aggressively, dogs, they're herding breeds. They're going to chase and bark at cars. I mean, how do you chase a car aggressively? But, I think with the children in mind, there needs to be a more serious consideration, because the dog bit the parent, and the children are out and about. I don't know what the ages the children are. I think that that's very telling, that it seems like it's another accident waiting to happen with the children.
And I agree with you, except it seemed like to me like he had fixed the fence and the gate and all of that in front already without us saying anything, to have that potentially, you know, to the best of his ability, be a non-issue to be able to protect the kids.
Was yeah, of course. When was the gate fixed? Because it's I see that there's multiple days.
Unfortunately, this wasn't the case that I had worked, so.
You're supposed to be able to work off.
But she has a good point. I mean, while we're waiting for him. However, it seems like he's resolved the issue by confining his property away from the driveway so the dog can't enter that area. Now, if he has another situation after that, then we have our rules and laws to say, this is a further amount. You weren't able to maintain and control the animal on your piece of the property outside the driveway. So,
well, if he gets another infraction or offense or whatever, aren't the fees even higher? And he would pay the full amount. So I feel like if he's reserved or resolved, I think a good 50%, but then if he does it again,
From this standpoint, again, I think you probably should look more directly at the June 2nd incident that he was cited for, and try to maybe not take so much of the past into consideration. But it does play into the fact of, you know, why the dogs are listed as vicious behavior, and chasing cars is just, you know, one of the ordinances that they were cited for.
And just a point of clarification as well, or something for you to think about, this gentleman had the option to appeal this to the hearings examiner and say, I don't think I did this, or I'm not taking, you know,
he's taking responsibility.
He chose to do it this way and admit guilt, and instead of going to a hearings examiner to see what might happen. Whereas the examiner would say, based on the evidence, this is what happened, and this is what your plan is. And there's no ability to reduce that once you go to a found, you know, and the order is affirmed. So just FYI.
All right, so I'm treating Mr. Couch's motion, original motion, as 50% reduction. And I'm going to treat Ms. Porco's amendment to a 20% reduction, if you feel strongly about that, Ms. Porco.
Yes.
All right. And so if we have an amendment, do I have a second to Ms. Porco's motion?
Yeah, I'll second that. And I would like to make a point about mace and self-protective devices. So I have a service dog that was attacked in my own neighborhood off leash. and it chomped through my 13-year-old service dog's ears and head and made holes. It was an unleashed German Shepherd. And the police and animal control, when Joanne was around, advised me to start carrying a police baton or pepper spray, or which I'm assuming is the same as mace. And now I carry a Zap Hike and Strike, which has a million joules of electricity that I can discharge and make a sound that will drive off, you know, coyotes or something. But I have disabilities in my shoulders, hands, spine. The last thing on earth I need to be doing is carrying a weapon in my own neighborhood. But as some of you know, I have a very problematic neighborhood. So I guess I would like to say a word on the behalf of someone protecting their children with mace. In my experience, pepper spray, I've never used my weapons on a dog, but I will not hesitate to do so if my dog is chomped or I'm chomped. But, and I don't welcome that, and I wouldn't want that, but I just kind of wanted to put in a word for that and back up Tara's comments as well.
All right, thank you. We need to be mindful of our time, too. So with that, we have a motion to amend to a 20% reduction. We have a second. Entertain a vote. All in favor, say aye. Ms. Sparko, Ms. Meiser?
Aye.
All right, we have one in favor. All opposed? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Abstentions? Motion fails. So now we're back to Mr. Couch's motion for a 50% reduction. Any further discussion? Right, we'll have a vote on that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Two opposed? Any abstentions? None. Motion carries. All right. Let's then move on to, can I just pick one?
Excellent.
All right. We'll do Miss Kinder, Brandy Kinder.
Brandy Kinder is the owner of four pit bulls that were running at large. Second. And attacked a minor while he was waiting for the school bus. The dogs had ran up, knocked him down, tearing some of his clothing. There were some photos that were submitted in the file. I'm hoping that everybody had an opportunity to review. There's some tears in the Levi's. No injuries were sustained. The father witnessed the incident, sent out sworn statements to both parties. They returned those to us. Officer Estes, in my opinion, looks like she had the option of citing for vicious behavior. Chose not to do that. But she actually took that into consideration as this is the first incident that they had. In further review, Rufus was involved in a bite March of last year. So I think taking that into consideration, they already gave her a little bit of a break by citing for more codes than we did. Really kind of where the county stands on this one.
All right. And the fines are four $250 fines, so right. $1,000. I do think that there is a one page of a statement where she references her son letting the dogs out, apparently. All right.
I would encourage just going forward. That we in the record talk about what we were cited for and what the fee was for, so that it's on the record in the meeting record. I know you have it in front of you, but
right.
Somebody who hasn't looked at it, and if I was listening to this, I would want to know.
So for the record, Brandy Kinder was cited for four counts of running at large. Citations N35128, N35129, N35130, and 131 on case number DSP 2300805. For a total amount of $1,000, $250 per incident.
That's helpful. So we'll start. Thank you. All right. With that, do we have any questions or comments? Discussion?
I have discussion. So this case reminded me of a case, and I'd like to, if there's any notes by the responding officer or personnel, I would like to know what they said. We had a case a couple years ago where there was a flock of geese or ducks, and they were at large. And the person who responded gathered the ducks or geese and got them back to the property. But the person had multiple counts for that little herd. So I would like to hear people's opinion on a similar connection to this, whether if it's four separate things or one incident is what we've brought up in the past, because the woman with the nine ducks would have been faced with $250 towards nine ducks. So I'd like other people's opinion on this, because we've brought this up in discussion before.
So that could be, because right now it's laid out sort of as four separate incidences, right?
It's four counts.
Four counts, yeah. Okay.
One for each.
Yeah, one incident, okay. Four dogs, four.
Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting.
What was the distance from the house to where the
incident took place?
Yeah.
Wherever the bus stop is. I don't have a correlation between where that homeowner lives versus where the attack took place.
Okay.
It is, I believe it's a residential area, so not an apartment complex.
And you said there was a bite with one of the dogs. There was a bite history with one of Rufus.
Yes, Rufus had a bite history on March 25th of last year.
Was that kind of a running at large bite or kind of an in-home?
No, there was just a home quarantine of Rufus at that time.
Does she plan on keeping Rufus unneutered?
That's her prerogative. There's no county law that states that she has to.
Curious.
Would be.
Other discussion?
Her letter. It does not sound like she's taking responsibility. In the last paragraph, it says, "I'm sorry that whatever happened that morning." But it's not like they get out every day. It was their first time. But it sounds like it wasn't. Am I on the right one?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, you highlighted that. Yeah, I thought that was very not taking responsibility. And you said that Rufus already has a history. So maybe we don't know about that.
I'm trying to look that up right
yeah.
now.
Because having four dogs together, especially one unneutered, is a huge responsibility.
That's
why I asked about the neutering. I know it's her prerogative, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
And there's no fence at this property? Is there no fence yard that we know of?
Not that I'm aware of. Like, again, I'm trying to.
Okay.
Yeah, that's four predator animals.
Well, and you're that all going after your pet?
Yeah, the one time they go after a kid.
Yeah.
That's huge responsibility.
Yeah. I'm not really in favor of reducing her fines.
No, I think that it would maybe, in my opinion, it would be something that she really needs to think about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure if reducing that. It doesn't feel like she's making any difference.
That's not a whoops.
Yeah.
Thing. That's a.
It's huge.
We need to
get out and wipe out a kid and rip off the gloves. That's huge.
That's a. Big apologies. I'm fencing the yard, gated, electricity, whatever.
Yeah, was there anything written that said that she was trying to accommodate that issue? Like she was seeing? No.
Okay, did you want to read that?
No, I've got it.
Okay.
But, I feel like you guys are not addressing my question.
Okay.
My question, I agree that you don't want somebody tackling, their dog's tackling your son or yourself or somebody else, but how, once we make a decision about incident versus number of animals, that can affect somebody in a situation that was, it's a lot less important. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted you to.
But there's a big difference between dogs.
Yeah.
I don't care what breed of dog.
But yeah, aggressive the law, behavior. The way he read it didn't say it's an animal at large, it doesn't say dog. That's my point.
So yeah. It could apply to ducks. But
I think that it's, I think maybe we had talked about this before that type of thing would be decided on upon each case individual, like a flock of sheep get out.
We gave that discussion to the officer.
Yes, it was responding.
And so was there any notes on that related to their opinion about the situation?
In general, I think our policy, what we try and instill in the folks that work for us is to make a good decision based on that situation. Where you have discretion, use it, make a good judgment call. I would defer that officer made that judgment call and cited all of those dogs for probably a reason. And to make a point for to make sure that the fine was of a nature that doesn't mean it shouldn't be reduced. That's not what I'm saying. But again, if those ducks got out 50 million times and took up all of our resources, I may encourage an individual site for every duck. But generally speaking, what's the goal? Let's do enough to make a point and hopefully resolve the situation.
Technically, under the law, they can't cite it for each
correct.
Dog, so.
They can.
Yeah, and so our job is to figure out whether there's mitigating circumstances for justifying a reduction.
So a question for you, Kyle, then. Can this decision be delayed until we find out what this person is trying to do to stop the prevention of this occurring in the future?
Well, I think the letter was supposed to be.
That was her
opportunity. That was her appeal.
See it as, when I read that, I saw that as either an inability to write clearly or a language difficulty. I'm not sure.
Are you looking at this one in the real world?
The Kinder one.
Yeah. Right.
I sorry that whatever happened that morning.
But it's not like they get out every day.
She says it was their first time. So.
But it also says that not only Rufus, it also says that Clark County received sufficient evidence that Nova, the other dog, a tan female lab, was running at large and involved in an incident of vicious behavior towards a child.
So my biggest concern then, since we've handled the situation and we're given the officer an opportunity to make their decision, was what we were waiting for before, is what's going to happen to keep from this happening again?
Right.
Doing it again. What is this person doing?
That's what she was supposed to put in the letter. But at the bottom, she's not even taking responsibility for it.
She says, I'm sorry that whatever happened that Monday. That's a wording.
Yeah.
She's accepting and apologizing. But she doesn't say, this is what I'm going to do or what I've done since this time. And that's either incomplete information for me or we're just going to have to go with it.
Well, I think we just go with it. Okay. Mr. Brazil came in.
All of these folks had an opportunity to come in and speak and clarify and speak more clearly. You can only go with what you have in front of you. You can infer what you'd like or infer what you don't like and come to a decision.
So since you addressed my original, my only question, no one wants to be tackled by dogs, period. But I just wanted to know clarification on that first, because it's going to come up again, because it keeps coming up again.
And I think so, it should be a case by case.
In reading some of Officer SD's notes here, the owner was not even home at the time. She says that her son had accidentally let him slip out the front door, and that only three dogs had gotten down, but then identified that she had five dogs. So there's a discrepancy there, but I think the reporting party can clearly articulate that it was five dogs. She also goes on to state that her dogs are chickens.
Yes.
Act aggressively other than barking at strangers. She was explained to that it's still acting in an aggressive manner. Explained that the report said there was four dogs running at large, which is a pack, which we could also cite for pack. We did not do that as well. So I think that, in my opinion, of what Officer Estes was trying to do was give her some of a break without throwing the book at her, and not oversighting, but yet trying to get some compliance and putting a cite to each dog. So if we only cite those three dogs in the future, if this one other dog does something and we get to the point where I order the dogs out of our jurisdiction, I'm missing one count. So I think
you still can do that, right?
Yes.
I mean, the citations are there. We're just talking about
right. So that was the reason that she cited all four, but just for the one count of running at large.
So in my opinion, that was pretty smart.
Yeah.
I would agree. Was there a recommendation given to the person about how to handle this situation in the future?
I would say probably not. I think she was very cavalier about the fact that
if there was not, even though we don't reduce a fine, can we give her a recommendation of how she might handle the fencing or other? We should give her a recommendation that some other type of action by her should be necessary to prevent it from the future. Because if it gets out the front door, And if it's going to be aggressive and knock a kid down, you don't want that to happen.
Yeah, and four big dogs slipping out the front door. Yeah, they're not like mice, right? They're big, right? A big
dog. I can understand one or two.
Right? Like four dogs slipping out.
Possibly
yeah.
Five is. That's a huge
rush out the door.
Yeah.
I don't know how you stop one.
Let's see what she's wrote under citations. Generally, the citations also include abatement verbiage.
I'd be surprised if the enforcement officer had
correct. If we gave conversation.
It's not documented, but typically what I'd like to see, and I'll have a conversation with all my officers about that, is on something like this, they put it in writing that, you're basically in an abatement, I would say something that you are hereby ordered to take any and all necessary measures to ensure that your dogs do not escape from your property. If they're compliant with us, then we actually would offer the services of saying, hey, let's take a look and see how they got out. Do you have a fencing issue? Do you have something like that? You know, most of the time we try to document that, whether that took place here or whether it was, say, Fort Knox and her kids just let the door open. Well, you know, they just let the door open. And no matter what precaution she might have put in place, wouldn't have been enough in that circumstance. So.
Picked up on the same thing that Russ picked up on, you know, when she said, my dogs are chickens, the most they'll do is just bark. And I think, was it true? I can't remember, but they had to say that's still aggression. And in the letter, I also picked up as the first person who spoke that she did not seem remorseful at all. And she said, I don't see how it's fair, and this type of language that almost felt childish to me when I read it, but it did seem mirrored in the other written portions and the interactions between her and the agent. So I sort of support the two people who said stuff like that as well.
All right, so we have a choice. We can entertain a motion for no reduction, or we can entertain a motion for a reduction in whatever amount. It up for motions.
I say for no reduction.
All right.
I'll second, yeah.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion for no reductions? Not hearing any. All right, we'll proceed to a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? All right, unanimous. All right. Let's move to Ms. Sweda.
Okay, this is for Clark County Animal Control case number DSP 2300310. Written to Ms. Shauna Sweda. She was received a violation for noise ordinance, violation number N35358, in the amount of $250. In February, Clark County Animal Control received a report of a barking dog The reporting party said they tried talking with the neighbor and basically didn't get any results that were expected at that time. They received the noise letters in the mail from both the reporting party as well as animal control. In May, we received another report and evidence submitted in a video clip, audio clip probably. The officer reviewed the audio clip and based on the evidence submitted, determined that there was a violation of the noise ordinance and issued a citation for an amount of $250. I attempted to call the reporting party today to see if there were any additional complaints since then, but I was unable to get a hold of her to verify that. So this time, we haven't received any additional complaints, so I would have to assume that it's either quieted down or they are aware that there's the 30-day appeal process and they're just waiting for this. I'm sorry, this is not a civil, this is a reduction, so yeah.
Right. So we, on the second page of the notice of violation, it says asking for a violation to be dropped.
Yeah.
And that's not what we're doing today. We're just doing litigation and the fine should be reduced. Right. Do we have any comments or questions about this item?
So do we have any information if anything has been done or why the just like this ongoing?
So typically in barking situations, we give them a verbal notice the first time, is, you know, or we'll have them send a letter to the violator, and it's a draft letter that the county provides that says there's a barking issue at the property. If that doesn't work, then we send out a letter from our office saying that basically the same thing, that there's been some reports of barking, you know, we're encouraging to curtail that. That you require the reporting party to provide us with a written statement as well as evidence to basically show that the dog is in excess of that ordinance, which is either 10 minutes straight or a total of 30 minutes within a 24-hour period.
Okay.
So once that evidence is submitted to us, we review it. If it meets that definition, we issue a citation. They can appeal it or, you know, pay the fine or do whatever they wanted to do. So in this circumstance, we always wait the 30 days for them to make that appeal, and then during that time frame, no other citations or any evidence can be submitted because we're in that holding pattern.
Okay.
So there is the possibility that something is still going on. They just know that they can't report it to us because we're in that process. Okay. But being that this is just for a reduction.
So the owners asked for a reduction, but have they submitted any type of explanation or statement as to
the
letter? There's a letter at the bottom.
Explains that she has a walking path by her property.
Yeah, I looked at
that. And behind your property.
Okay.
So people walk their dogs to the fence line.
Okay.
All right. And then she also explained that she has barking collars on her dog. I read the code that you were talking about, Russ. It is a very, we tried to work the wording on it and it didn't work. So going with what it says, if the dog barks, it's barking. She admitted it's barking. She's asking for a reduction. At the same time, the code says there can be reasons why somebody incites the dog to bark. And they opened a park down the street from my house a few years ago. Now people walk by my sidewalk. And my dog, it took a lot of training for my dog not to go out and meet them and bark. Now she's much better, not 100%. So the excitement or causal of a dog barking is a rational one because we must have 50 dog walkers now by my fence. And so I can see how this woman is frustrated because she put a bark collar on. Yeah, I put a vibrating collar on my dog, which helped. And then I trained her by saying, I got it. And all the training steps that you do to say, I got the perimeter, you don't have to go off the bark. So she's trying to make an attempt. And she has reasonable cause that the dog's being incited to bark.
Right.
It's just when you, there's one that goes through Florida and back up going west, and they go right by all the houses. And we walk our dog there. and dogs will bark as we go by and it stops. But if you have continuous trail, people walking the dogs in the morning before it gets hot. Mm-hmm. All summer they got hot, stopped the last few days. There's very few dog walkers. But then in the evening when it cools down, they go by. So I'm feeling for this person just because of the situation. But she admits she's got a dog that's barking and she's asking for a direction.
So I got from her letter, it sounds like she's only lived next to the person who's complaining for a few months and that he's peeking over the fence and she's got a pistol or something.
Oh, that's the first time coming over to their house.
Okay.
He had a pistol on his hip, you know, open carry, and Ben started looking over our fence into our side yard.
Yeah, so between him peeking over the fence, I mean, do we know? And then she did say too, like I was thinking it, and then I read through the letter at the end, and she mentioned it too. But it's not a video, and it's a recording, and there's all these houses. I looked up the address, and all right. These houses, and then a walking path and fields right behind. Like,
yeah.
It's at the very back. So I totally get it. Like what you're saying.
It's like
people walking by, and they're letting their dogs come right up to her fence, or they're letting up to their dogs.
Well, and
so it's hard. With the guy peeking over the fence, only lived there for a couple months, and she said the neighbors on the other side live really close, and they don't even hear the dogs, and they're inside most of the day. So she's like, how do I know that the recording is my dogs?
Yeah, there's at least five houses around
that have dogs. Barking dogs.
Well, the walking path is used quite a bit, and what I did is I put a 3-foot fence 6 or 8 feet back on my property, and they still bring their dog up the extra 6 feet so they can nose their dog with my dog at the gate.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in my property 6 feet. But it's in a continual thing. I see it almost every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do require that they submit a sworn statement to us under penalty of perjury that all the information they're providing is true and accurate. So, and then, you know, if there's any question, we'll have multiple officers listen to the recordings to verify that. I don't feel that there's any reason that, you know, people would generally lie about it, but, you know, does that happen? Absolutely. Do people perjure themselves? Absolutely. There are some exceptions that, you know, we do consider when a dog does bark. So, you know, somebody trespassing, obviously there's a reason right there. Is the person trespassing, did that start the same time as the barking? You know, it's not really articulated in the letter, but the fact that she's, you know, obviously, you know, admitted that her dog is doing it. I don't know that I would consider the dogs on the walkway provocation. That's, you know, my dogs bark at the squirrels, you know, every single day. I'm sure I'm in violation of the barking ordinance, but you know, it's not necessarily provocation. So there, you've got to have a pretty strong case for the provocation, I think, on this one.
All right. Let's again be mindful of our time.
Thank you, Russ. But I don't want your opinion, because my dog chases the squirrels all the time, too. All the time. Without fail. And she rarely barks at them. But she does bark at every passing by dog if I'm not working with her on a continuing basis.
Yeah, but it does take time.
All right, so we can entertain a motion for no reduction or a motion for a reduction in a certain amount. Open up for motions.
What was she asking for? Does it say?
Asking for violation to be dropped.
I do not feel that we should be facing a fine when his dogs are at fault with many others. Basically, his dogs bark, other neighbors' dogs bark.
So he has dogs, too.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry, I didn't have that letter. I'm so, forgive me.
Thank goodness for phones.
Yeah.
I make a motion that we make it $100 as a warning. Reduce it to $100 as a notice that you've got to keep dealing with this problem. It didn't go away because we got rid of the fine completely.
Right.
I don't think Russ mentioned that it had been gone on a long period of time.
He's only been in a few months, yeah. The neighbor.
So what happens if, let's finish this part and then I'll ask.
Yeah, let's, I'm sorry. Do I have a second?
Oh, well,
took $100.
To take $100 off?
We don't want to reduce, in my opinion, reduce a $200. Fine that doesn't help handle the cost of the county and our professionals that are having to deal with it. You don't want to knock it down to a certain price where it doesn't. Is it, we need to fund what our officers are doing.
Right.
Yeah, and she does live in a housing development, and it does need to be.
Well, and I'll second that.
Right. So we got a motion, we got a second. Any further discussion? All right, not hearing any, we'll move to a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. All right, let's move to Mr. Mupo.
Okay. Clark County Animal Control, case number DSP-2301790. Joe Mupo was cited for running at large, civil violation for two dogs, N-35122 and N-35124. Total penalty amount is $500. On a couple separate occasions, the 22nd and 23rd, his two German Shepherds had entered onto his neighbor's property and started chasing his goats.
Sheep.
Right. At that, the second time, apparently, it sounds like the sheep were injured by the German Shepherds. One of them appeared to be very severe injury to the left rear leg. I'm hoping that everybody had the opportunity to review the photos. I don't need to show those. Very apologetic. You know, he was going to fix the problem. Never did quite get to fixing that problem in a reasonable amount of time. So officer, let's see which officer is, Estes, cited him for large for two counts. And I think she gave him another break just because could have had vicious behavior included on that because of the damage to his sheep, as well as property damage. So there's two additional counts that could have been cited for. So with this one here, and based on the severity of the injuries, I think it's pretty clear cut and dry that you know, his dogs did this, and I don't know that he has actually gotten around to fixing that fence issue as of today.
All right, let's open it up to questions or comments.
So I am also a sheep farmer. I do know the person with these sheep, and that's her sole income. So it's important that they don't get attacked by other people's dogs. But I did read through his letter, and if I had to deal with somebody who owned dogs that attacked my sheep, it sounds like he is doing a good job. He said he turned his garden into a kennel with 8-foot-tall fencing, heavy duty. He added hot wire. It sounds like he is doing everything. He apologizes, and he does have the dogs for protection. I understand that dogs, if they're not trained with livestock, they're predators, and the second they will go after them. It's, for them, way too much fun. I know what the dog did to the sheep, and it was not something that any sheep farmer wants to deal with, but I do feel like he's admitting fault. He is working. Look, he worked to make it better, it looks like.
He paid the vet bill?
He paid the vet bill.
$1,700 vet bill.
Yeah, and he does not have much for income either, so it sounds like he is a good neighbor that is taking responsibility, that did not obviously want this to happen. As a sheep farmer, I would say this guy does probably deserve maybe a reduction. He's already put in a lot of money in fencing.
Gravel,
fixing
electric
it,
fences,
electric fence, paid the vet bill.
5-acre property, electric fence.
Yeah.
I feel is there like a way that we can confirm that? That's actually, I mean, he's written out that he's done that, but is it worth it to actually go
I feel
and
like
lay our eyes on it?
Because in the original transcript or whatever, it says
Mary reported the incident to animal control 9 days later as they did not see any progress towards fixing the issue or rehoming the dogs.
Right.
And there was a second issue. The first time they got out, they didn't hurt the sheep. The second time they did. It's from what I'm gathering.
Yes, the second instance is where the sheep were actually injured.
Yeah, so she called both instances.
Yeah, I did not see his letter, and I apologize for not seeing that in the case file. If he has indeed taken those measures, and in typical circumstances, if something isn't done, we would normally hear back from the people because nothing was done, but it's not a policy that we go back to follow up on things because
Mary would make some noise if it wasn't happening.
We're a reaction agency, not a proactive, because once something happens, then we take action. So.
Well, I would guarantee the dogs are smart. German Shepherds are smart. If the fencing wasn't done right, they'd be out again in a second.
That's why he did the gravel, heavy gravel.
Mm-hmm. I think he did it right.
He did it right.
Okay.
All right. There came a motion.
Could I just ask one more question of Russ, please?
Sure, go ahead.
So Russ, and I'm trying to be respectful of the agents who did all the work and calculations on site, which we couldn't assess and balance aside from letters and stuff. So you mentioned that, I guess it is true here, already removed vicious behavior and property damage. She could have added those counts as well. What would those have added to the fine?
It would have doubled it.
Uh-huh. I mean, it just seems relevant to, I'm just curious how that calculates in. She's already reduced it by half. That just interesting to note.
Yeah, and again, our main goal is compliance. So if we get compliance, I'm fine with that. I mean, putting somebody out of their rent or food on the table is not something that we want to do. So.
Well, then two counts is $250, right?
Correct. One for each.
So each dog got a count.
Correct. So it's a total of $500, but it would have been $1,500 if we had gone with citing for vicious behavior and damage to property.
Oh, okay.
All right. Now,
and they've licensed?
Yes.
Yes,
she has been.
Let's hear your opinion, Kyle.
I kind of thought he did the right thing and was very apologetic. He paid the vet bills, and if I were by mine, that I would consider a reduction. No job, cooperative.
Yeah, it sounds like he wants to keep the dogs. They're important to him.
He spent a lot of money.
Yeah, that he probably didn't really have. I would like to make a motion to reduce by 50%.
Okay, a motion to reduce to $250. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion or questions? None. Go ahead and move to our vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion. Great.
How are Kat and Tara voting? Because I don't hear anything.
Oh, I said aye.
Oh, okay.
I think Tara walked away for a second.
I'm not hearing it, so I was just curious.
I see the blue light up around.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And I'm paying more attention to the nose and the eye. They could be out of the room and it's still unanimous.
Right.
All right. Al Salty Fart Ferris, I think, is the last one.
Yes, save the best for last. Clark County Animal Control case DSP 2300519. Owner is Al Salty Ferris. Received a citation for his German Shepherd, his Doberman dog running at large. There's quite a back history to this one. He had numerous complaints dated back to February about his dog running at large. We have issued him abatement, ordering him to keep his dog on his property. We have written numerous citations to him. It has gotten to the point now where I actually ordered his dog to be removed from Clark County. We had gone out with Vancouver PD, removed the dog from the property. The dog was taken to the Humane Society. Due to a clerical error, he was allowed to retrieve his dog from the Humane Society. At such point, our office continued to try to get compliance with him. He chose not to do so, and as such, we had to obtain a search warrant. We had to go out there and physically remove the dog from the property with a search warrant. He has been non-compliant with all of our requests for contact and has disregarded, you know, every fact that his dog is running at large, has chased citizens on the sidewalks. And I think there's a video or photo of at least one person that the dog was chasing. So I would recommend and ask that this be upheld as is and no deduction be granted to him.
And so then for the record, do you want to go through the citations and the amounts?
Sure. Yeah.
I love this note. Oh, it's very sweet.
Yes, very
sweet. In consideration of receiving the penalties prior, I have fixed the fence and sniper has not been let out unsupervised. The citation was for him being off leash and unsupervised. I request the citation to be waived.
Yeah, but this is a really thick packet.
Yeah. You just get to the.
Well, it's one of those things. How many? Yeah. No. I agree. So I.
Yeah, let me bring up the.
Just for the record.
So we're just voting when we get there. We're just voting on the one that's here, or is there multiple that we're going to do?
Just the one.
Just the one. Okay.
We can't increase it.
Because there are multiple. There's 100. There's a 200. There's a 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was asking.
300. There's a 400.
Right.
Okay. On March 11th, an abatement was written to him to keep his dog on his property at all times and take whatever necessary actions necessary to ensure that he stays there. On April 18th, the first citation was delivered and posted to his door because he would not answer. On April 25th, the second citation was delivered for running at large. On March 11th, abatement notice A00457 was issued.
And that had no penalty?
That's no penalty. That's a written warning that any additional violations could result in citations or additional enforcement action. On April 18th, the first violation for running at large, N35604, was issued and delivered to the address posted to the door. On April 22nd, a second running at large citation, N35079, was written and delivered on April 25th and posted to the door. On April 25th, he was also cited for unlicensed animal, which he has not licensed the dog since that was written as well. On April 25th, April 27th, another citation, N35080, was written in third offense for running at large. On June 12th, abatement number A00384 was issued and delivered to his residence ordering him to remove Sniper from the county as he had already exceeded the habitual violator ordinance. Impounded the dog, taken it to the Humane Society, and it was housed there for 3 or 4 days, and then he went down and picked it up, and then that kind of did the search warrant phase of removal. So I finally got a out-of-state address that the dog was taken to, so he has finally complied with my notice to remove the animal from our county. We will be continuing to follow up on him just to make sure, because there's a strong possibility, in my opinion, that the dog is going to end up back at his residence.
Well, it sounds like by his written thing at the end that he already has the dog home, if it's because it's saying that he has not been let out unsupervised, it sounds like he's home.
That was from the prior.
Okay. Sorry, I misunderstood.
So yeah, at this point the dog is now out of Washington State, and we're hoping that it does not come back. But due to the extreme amount of hours put into this case, I would request that no reduction in this be granted.
Clarify this for me. The report says a $400 fine, but the citation is up to $800.
So you can only cite for the ones that have already been upheld or not appealed. So all of the additional cites were written at a secondary level because they all compiled within a very short time period. He didn't have but he had the legal right to appeal each one of those. So had they been upheld or denied, that would have classified as $400 range.
For one citation?
So are you saying he's appealing the other citation?
He's City of Vancouver, so City of Vancouver is got a lower amount than the county does. He claimed to have appealed all of the other citations. No citation or appeals were received by our office.
Okay, so it's $400.
Yes, so the amount is $400 that total penalty is $400.
All right. As clarification, I'll open it up to discussion.
Is there any further information about the condition of the distress of the animal issue that was brought up in the reports that we read?
Once the animal was removed from the Humane Society.
Any questions? All right. Any motion for reduction or no reduction?
I'd like to make a motion that we take Russ's recommendation on this.
And yes. No reduction.
No, okay. I have a motion for no reduction. I have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, move to a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Extensions? Hearings. All right, that concludes the hearing portion. Go back to our agenda and reports.
Jackie.
Animal Protection Control Quarterly Report.
I have it.
I emailed it out, but I can pull it up on the screen if you want me to.
Okay, so I'm hoping everybody had the opportunity to read the stats that were sent out. Have actually prior quarter stats for January, February, and March. So in looking at the direction where it started for the beginning of the year, everything kind of trends up, which is typical as you get into the summer months. So for deceased animals, covering between 20 and 50 per month. So this quarter was 101. running with the pets. And think directly to the weather and how nice it is outside. People are opening their doors and windows and out on the barge. Livestock, pretty consistent with very low numbers. We don't get a whole lot of running of large livestock, but we get occasional calls. Since I'm actually surprised that it hasn't it get here in May into June. Working complaints, you know, we get a lot of complaints. Just a couple of calls that we get in this construction process. Pets, livestock, and starting to trend up a little bit, but you know, all directly related to better weather. Yes.
Wait, sorry.
Sure.
And Kat, you think we're doing a lot of feedback for some noise. Perfect. Thank you.
Jackie's here every hour. Bites, vicious. Vicious is a very subjective term, so it all depends on the person that's calling, whether or not they say that it's vicious. That doesn't necessarily mean these are the vicious dogs that we had for that month. That's just the number of calls that the person may have said the dog was acting vicious. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it was. Licensing calls, wildlife, livestock assist, everything has stayed pretty consistent other than the non-service calls, which I think we are tracking a whole lot better than we have in prior years. These are calls that are either not our jurisdiction or calls that are just reports of something that you know, we will not be responding to. So the big thing that I see the trend in here down is in notice of abatement and hearings. So the amount of hearings and notices of abatement all kind of go hand in hand. So the more notices or violations that we're writing citations for, the more penalties we're collecting, in turn means the more hearings get scheduled for people to appeal. Pet licensing is still a challenge, and I'm sure I wish we had a better solution, but right now we've actually stopped the process in our current pet licensing project, and we are looking into possible new software or new company to take on that task. So the officers in the field now are pushing that a little bit harder. They're getting licensing brochures, literature on it, writing people citations to license their dogs, and then giving them the 10 days to do so. If they don't, it gets automatically, you know, upheld. Failure to license your pet is the one and only ordinance that you cannot appeal for. There's no appeals for that. So they're trying to take it case by case and not going crazy with citing people, because we're still trying to do more of an education and public service than enforcement action. But if it's warranted, they're doing so. Total fees collected from licensing, and then sheltering all of the animals that have been picked up and taken in. January was 159, February 123, March 82, and we start jumping up in April, 110, 163, 207. So we're out there picking up a lot more animals and taking them to the shelter, and that's causing a lot more business for them and more work for our officers. Nothing to me jumps out as, you know, out of the ordinary in our requests for service. It's kind of consistent when you really look at it on the whole. So unless anybody has any questions regarding these.
I always have a question.
Sure.
Cats. Yes. I get an email from the Humane Society, and they say this is cat season.
Yeah.
I'm noticing this, like, 100 or 200 cats right now in their care. Is there anything more about educating the public about getting their cats spayed? Because that's a huge number.
Yeah.
Just a home right there, not anything other than
that. Humane Society does quite a bit of work on trying to educate people, especially people that call up that have good intentions gone bad, where they kind of, oh, they rescued this little litter of kittens. Well, okay, one, you probably kidnapped them from their mother. Now you've got six unaltered cats in your house, and they're just going to breed, and that's going to go from six to 26 in the matter of 8 months. So yeah, they do stuff with that. You know, unfortunately, we don't go out and pick up healthy cats. So that's one of the biggest issues right there. And not that we could ever pick up every healthy cat and get it spayed and neutered, but one of the, I think, opportunities that we have is to bolster our trapping and release program. And then turn that would possibly help with freeing up some space for people that do get into these unintended circumstances where they made a mistake.
So is the TNR project, is that through the Humane Society or is that something Animal Control?
No, it's strictly through the Humane Society. And actually there's a couple other smaller agencies that kind of do that as well. There's the Feral Cat Coalition and the
Furry Friends.
Thank you. Furry Friends will do that too. So, and then there's other smaller people that will give out, you know, vouchers to get your cats spayed and neutered and stuff. So,
My understanding is that there's super long wait lists, yeah. Or it's just getting really difficult.
So we actually had I wouldn't say it's a large impound this week. We went to a house that had 18 cats in it in hoarding type situations, so we removed those cats out of the house for their safety. So we added to that population, you know, in one fell swoop. So not that we want to do that, but that was in the best interest of health and safety of the animals, so we had to take action at that point.
Can I ask, Kyle, you're on the board, aren't you? So is there anything else you want to add about that? I'm curious because the sheer number shocked me. For the current number right now is almost 200 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious how things go with that.
Yeah, and I wish Jim was here because she knows all about that.
Right.
We can get a report from her at the next meeting. But they do also have a strong foster program at the Humane Society for cats. I just heard at the last meeting every Saturday at 10 o'clock, they do some kind of program with cats, inviting the public in. So they're trying to educate the public through these little programs.
I don't know if you've noticed that there's been a couple of articles in the Columbian over the past couple of weeks about kitten season and what to do if you come across kittens that the mother isn't there, and you know, unless they're clearly sick or injured, leave them alone. Don't bring them. You know, we have been trying to partner with the shelter to reduce the amount of healthy cats that are coming into the shelter. And there's many reasons for that. The shelter doesn't have the capacity. The county, any cat that is found, any kitten that is found and brought to the shelter that belongs to the county costs the taxpayer dollars $290 per animal. So while I'm budget conscious when it comes to my budget because I'm general fund. I'm taxpayer dollars. That's all I have. I get a budget at the beginning of the year and that's it. And and I'm already through, you know, I can go through it by July, August, because the Humane Society bills are so high because there's so many animals coming into the shelter that we have to pay for. And, you know, it is at a detriment to my program because I have no money then that I can spend on anything else.
Well, it's also a detriment to the Humane Society because it doesn't just cover the 90, does not cover the entire cost of the animal.
Right.
So the Humane Society itself is subsidizing those animals. So it's not helpful to the Humane Society either.
Yeah. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. And it's going to present itself to be a continuing problem moving forward. In terms of, you know, how we're going to balance that, the Humane Society, the county, and what can we do to reduce that? It is a concern moving forward into the future. And so that's just for me. That's a budget issue, and it's
something that is on my list of challenges. I have to go before the council, you know, for with four separate budget packages for animal control, just so that I make sure I have money to be able to do what I need to do for this year and for next year. It should be an interesting conversation with council. I will be inviting Andrea to support our position and be able to also better explain why we are seeing the trends that we're seeing. Because I think it's also important for people to understand. I quite frankly think there's a lot of people on the council in the community that just, they don't realize, they don't understand.
No, people don't. They don't. I mean, I think they're, yeah. We've done a really good job. I spent time working in places where the animals are all right there in the streets. Like, you, it's undeniable. Like, you cannot talk to anybody and say, like, oh my gosh, is this a dog problem, a cat problem? Everyone's like, yeah. But we are really good at tucking everything behind doors and keeping everything compartmentalized. And unless you like stumble on, like, oh, look at that cat. That one cat over there represents a whole bunch of cats that people just don't know about. And the education factor, historically what I found across the board is nonprofits either they don't put the money aside to educate, they don't have the money, you know, they're spitting on a wildfire every day, so there's no time, the resources.
That's what I feel like.
Yeah. That you don't have the resources or the wherewithal to educate. And COVID, I felt like, was a huge turning point. Like,
yes.
I felt like the Feral Cat Coalition, like everybody was like, yeah, like we feel like we're getting ahead. We feel like we have a handle on it. COVID happened, spay and neuter shut down, and it just like literally like years of progress.
Yes,
was just
I feel
lost
the same way.
In just a short time.
I used to do, or I still do, I just had a baby, so I'm wondering my pregnancy, and I have not been fostering kittens. But I used to foster, 3 years. But most of the time I would just do a litter or two a year. And that's all, everybody knows, crazy cat lady. Everybody knows, oh, here's a litter of abandoned kittens. And very obviously abandoned, skinny, sad, dying, eyes leaky. Okay, fine, I'll come get them. Like, all the time. As soon as COVID hit, I probably did just myself on my dime, my budget, like 40 or 50 kittens, and then adopting them out for giving them away.
Yeah.
$20. This person gave me $100. You know, like, just,
well,
I haven't quit because it's exhausting.
Well, and then you look at the spay and neuter component. I mean, because that's where it all just goes off the rails.
Yes.
Is that if we don't have, and the wait list is
really
long.
Yes, it
really
was
long.
So hard to get them fixed.
I mean, even now, I think the Humane Society has, it sounds like primarily the low-cost spay and neuter services that are available in this area are for cats, primarily for cats. Southwest Washington has, looks like they have a really minor amount, like $25 or something. But like you go across the river where the Humane Society, Feral Cat Coalition, their fees are small. But it's like people don't know. Like, if people don't know about it, and mind you, if they do know about it and they can't get in for 6 or 7 months, what's the point?
It's too late. Yeah. That's the problem that I'm running across, is that I tell people, okay, call the Feral Cat Coalition, call whatever. But by the time their appointment comes around, the cat's pregnant, or the cat's bigger, or the cat's gone, finding a husband, or whatever it's doing. It's hard because it used to be like, okay, I'm going to call the Feral Cat Coalition, and they're like, okay, this coming Sunday.
Exactly.
I have an appointment.
Yeah.
So now with these wait times, it is so hard. And if anybody has tried to keep a cat in heat in the house, number one, they're screaming. It's horrible to deal with. Number two, they are looking for any hole they can get out of, any window that's cracked open. They will pull it open. The door you open it, and they shoot out. Like, they know what they're doing. It is, it's so hard. And then they have to be 2 pounds to get them fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes if you take them and they're not quite 2 pounds yet, and then you got to wait another 2 or 3 months to get an appointment. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for answering questions. All right. So thank you, Wes. And so
Last item of on our agenda, I think, is new business 2023 challenges.
Yeah, so, you know, Russ and I went to the Humane Society's last board meeting, which was just a couple weeks ago. Last week. Time flies, I'm having fun. And it was great because we had never done that. And it was nice to meet everybody and we had a great time. We did a little presentation. So this is a little bit of repeat information because Kyle's heard it. Jen would have heard it if she was here. But Russ stood up and kind of said, hey, look, here are some of the challenges that animal control is facing. And I just thought it's always good to educate folks who are interested in volunteering and listening and can share the message and you know, be educated themselves and then share that information with others. It's always good. I think it's the best way to, you know, help get out messaging. Or if you're in a, you are the people who are going to be in conversation with other people about animal issues. So the more information you have, that comes from us, I think is great, and you can share that information and know that it's, you know, true and accurate from us. I already talked a little bit about budget issues. I get a pot of money, and then I don't have enough. I don't have enough money to do all the things that. We would like to do, or even for situations that come up that are outside of our control. You know, we have a real problem with some vehicles. We finally got a new vehicle after like 10 months. We were supposed to get it last year. But we have some old vehicles that cost a lot of money to fix. I mean, you can't go down to Dick Hanna and buy an animal control vehicle. And they're $75,000 brand new. We have issues with fleet and, you know, the gas goes up, right? The price of gas. So the money fills the tank, and my budget has to take that into consideration as well. You know, we have not been fully staffed for more than 2 months in the last 2 years. There has been some salary savings there, but I can't do anything with that because it's being eaten up by other expenses that are above and beyond what's going on. So, you know, I would love to hire a tent for Jackie to help her with licensing stuff, and I'm not able to do that until I get my budget situation fixed. You know, we've run into most recently it used to be in Washington State that animal control officers were limited commission. Special commissioned by the sheriff to be able to go out and do the regulatory enforcement of the crimes of animal cruelty, neglect, and whatever else. There is a civil component, which is what you see before you, is what we have today as we issue civil citations and civil abatements. And those opportunities have been slowly eroded over the last few years to where the sheriff will no longer issue limited commissions for animal control officers, for fire marshals, you know, for other folks that would have the reserve deputy program that we used to have in the county is no longer, right? And it really boils down to liability, because a fully commissioned peace officer in the state of Washington has a whole list of training requirements, full background checks, on and on and on before you come on and get hired and are able to work in that capacity. The limited commission doesn't have all of those requirements, and some agencies, organizations, especially with laws like Senate Bill 5051 that kind of erode police power and authority, that it's the sheriffs in certain jurisdictions are saying, we're not going to issue these commissions because it's a liability issue. You're not fully trained. So therefore I can't vouch for you because it's under the sheriff's name. The sheriff is completely responsible for anybody he commissions, right? So
We used to be able to call CRESA and get license plate information and premise history on places where we would roll up and we'd get a not so great feeling, right? And we want to know, are we entering, knocking on a door where there's, you know, high propensity, high reports of crime, domestic violence, whatever it may be. I have a code enforcement case where we don't send people because there's a history of gun violence and domestic violence. We won't go without law enforcement. We don't have the ability to do that anymore. It's like a week and a half ago, CRESA stopped providing that information to us. And so it burdens us. It puts our officers in a situation where they, you know, it's a safety issue. It's one more layer that's been peeled away from us to be able to feel like we can do our job safely and effectively. So there's a lot of things happening that where I'm asking the sheriff, can you fully commission our people? And if you have to move them under the sheriff in order to do that, then let's do that, because I think that's the right thing to do. I don't know if the sheriff is interested in that. I have no idea. I haven't heard back. So those are significant challenges. Our officers are, you know, I'll be the first to say 15 years ago, I would have poo-pooed the idea that an animal patrol officer needs a ballistic vest or, you know, is the same as a first responder. But I'm in it, I see it, I hear it, and it's absolutely true. And in fact, the best story that I can tell is we hired a prior police officer who wanted to, have an easier time at it and chose animal control, thinking, you know, this, I won't have the overtime, I won't have the risk, and we hired him, and he was great, he was awesome, and he quit. And he said, you know, why would I take a job where I'm exposed to the same risks I was as a police officer? I have no protection, meaning he can't carry a gun or a taser or even a baton, and I get paid a lot less. So see ya. And now he's working at the Vancouver Police Department. That sums it up, right? And so we're all living in a world where it's a whole lot nastier out there, and these officers are going to the same places, dealing with the same people, and exposing themselves to very similar risks. So, you know, you have to have the people to do the job. And if you can't provide them with what they need to do the job safely, then you're gonna see a constant turnover. We're gonna have unfilled positions. We're gonna be inundated, and it's a cycle. And it's sometimes it's frustrating. So that's one of the big challenges. Hearings, examiner fees. You know, we're doing the job. We're out there issuing these citations, just as you're seeing it today. Everything we take before the hearings examiner costs the county and the general fund and the taxpayers' dollars. I've paid the hearings examiner more money in 2023 than I have in the last 5 years combined. Okay, so all the costs are going up. This is the cost of doing business. So, you know, what are our choices? Not doing the business. So that doesn't seem to be providing the service to the public. So. It's just, these are things people don't know. They don't know. They're not aware of the struggles and the challenges that we have. So I just, if you don't talk about them, you know, you try and brush it under the rug, nothing's ever going to kind of get done. So we're working, I mean, when I got here a couple years ago, public perception of animal control was pretty bad. You know, oh, nobody answers the phone. Oh, nobody responds. Oh, you know. I think we had two people working at one time for a few months, and it was awful.
Miserable.
It was miserable. You're not sure. We're not going to get to you. I mean, I don't know when we're going to get to you. We'll get to you. I don't know when. You know, it might be 2 months from now. It was really bad. We've come a long way. We've made a lot of progress. And we just keep getting, like, you know, it's like Jamin. We just keep getting a peg to get out, and pretty soon it's not going to fall down. So, you know. We're trying our best. So that's That's my negative Nelly speech. But it's my reality. It's Russ's reality. So from the position of the advisory board, just to help me understand sort of what the parameters are for us, how can we support for her asks to the commission, to the council? How can we, I assume we're not just here to be a sympathetic ear. Right.
I'm venting.
But being able to come up with some, ideas, solutions, things to throw out there of like, we keep circling back to education. Okay, so can we put together something that says, here's some ideas of what we could possibly do for education? Do we need to go, when she goes to see the council, go with her, have somebody go with her, or all of us go with her and be, a presence and a voice to say that this is an important service? What I have found kind of historically is that this is a service that is not valued as much as it should be. Like, it is an important service, and I think if you ask most people who have animals, they're like, well, yeah, control is important, but they're not putting it together. Like, they're not putting it together that it's a service that's constantly at risk. It's a service that always gets their money like pulled away and picked at, to where they're like running around, without the proper equipment. And I look at sort of over time, over decades, just the way that we've all changed as human beings, becoming more compassionate and more loving and more caring. And animal control has become sort of less about like, oh, ticket, and more like really trying to work with people to help them become better pet people, right? Better pet parents. And we need to support that process. And, and whatever it's like, I don't know what role we would take to do that. It's like, I've done things from PSAs, I've done petitions, I've done all kinds of things. One thing I need to add, I'm going to do a little local radio show called Rescue Road on KXRW. It's the community radio station, but I would love to do an episode once a month where maybe Donna or Russ, you guys come on and we just talk about animal control and kind of, hey, what's going on in the county? I can't do it because it's the way that the show station is set up, it is educational. So I can't personally like say my opinions, but I can bring other people on and they can share their opinions. So that's kind of an educational thing. But if there's something that we can do to support, these shortcomings, I would love to jump into that.
I can share with you a couple of things I've tried. It's really difficult. Listening to the workload that was ever increasing for them, and the idea of licensing and not having a problem, I worked really hard to find the different avenues to help. Talk to the universities about getting interns, mm-hmm. college students or interns. But I got approval to approach them, but it's up to them to follow through. And I'm not sure if they've done it. But I've done numerous calls and emails and say, okay, here's the person you're going to call. This is the contact. And it's very difficult. But I've gone that avenue. The other way is I researched the media, like you were talking about. And I found out that different media outlets, radio and television, they have a cycle of free snippets they'll give to organizations. And then made the suggestion to partner with like Portland and get one announcement that applies to the whole area. So even that took a while, calling all those radio stations. Do you have a program that allows people to get their charity or community organization in the free cycle of airtime? And it's usually, by the way, 15 seconds.
Right.
For a certain period of time. That's a lot of phone calls and that's a lot, but I don't give up. It's just not happening. It's very difficult.
One of the things I noticed, and I brought it up before too, but social media is hard because there's no animal control presence on social media, and that's a hard one. I think we've talked about too, you know, who can make the correct responses, because some of like the air that they get on social media, there's a few big people that have a lot of followers that, you know, do the big poo-poo on animal control, like they're not doing their job and blah blah blah. And then I come in here and I see the animal control puts their heart and soul, risks their life to do this job. Like, if we could, I wish that we could, the whole county could see how hard these officers are working to do this.
Well, you know,
and it's so hard to make that and be like, this is how you should view it when there's all these big people that are just poo-pooing the thing.
Well, let me add some positives, because I, you know, like I said, I'm usually half glass empty.
The next word.
But we do have one of our officers that they're doing a new CBTV segment on animal control officers at work. So that's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. And so that will come out and be a fairly, you know, I don't know, it's probably going to be at least a 10-minute segment. Paul is going to be our face of animal control, and they're gonna ride around with him, and they'll take footage and all that. So that's very positive. That will be available. It'll be new and fresh. We're gonna give him some pointers on, you know, some topics to make sure he hits. Which, you know, a simple one is very much pet licensing. There is really an untapped revenue there for us you know, if we could just increase that even 20%. Would make a huge difference in our budget or our revenue. Let's just say revenue.
Can I chime in on the pet licensing?
Yeah.
I think one of our biggest issues with pet licensing is getting people to renew their license every year, because they'll pay the initial fee, especially if they're adopting from the Humane Society. But when that new invoice comes in 6 months, when the pet turns 6 months old or 1 year from now, they're not renewing them. And that's the hindrance, I think, that we're facing.
Right. Is that going to be addressed in the new software that you're hopefully talking about?
I think it is addressed. It'll be maybe addressed in a way that's a little bit more convenient if we can get people to do it online.
Because what you were talking about, the new software, but then is that not going forward? I think.
Unfortunately, we were so close.
I know. I remember you were like an inch away.
We were so close. And then some data things started happening. And that freaks our IT department out. So when you have data.
Freaks me out too.
Well, it freaks me out too. Yes. So when you have some instability in the data within the software, somebody above me decided, yeah, we're going to scrap this project and you're going to have to start over. Sorry. So here we are, starting over, which is very frustrating.
Yeah, as far as the social media goes, I probably forgot to tell you this, but in our last manager's meeting, it was kicked around that they may look into hiring a full-time employee to manage a Facebook account, Instagram,
and stuff
for community development. So that would be us, code enforcement.
Building department
center. So there would be one person that would manage that, and
yes,
then at least have the control of the narrative that goes out there. So each of the department managers would be able to submit stuff to post and, you know, get vetted before.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I'm
love that.
Horrible on social media, and I would be posting things with spelling errors and, you know, bad selfies and everything else. So we want somebody that actually knows what they're doing to take over that.
And would have the blessing of our PIO office,
yes,
because they're the ones that kind of have the control over county messaging. So
I think it's going to be huge if that gets done. I think that's going to be huge.
Because
code enforcement too is another one that everybody's like, but it doesn't have to be. It's so, like, when I was working for another company, code enforcement was super helpful. Like, coming in and being like, hey, this is what we need to do to be safe. Like, easy, good, but everybody gets kind of scared. I think that a good social media presence would be very positive, beneficial.
For sure.
Especially, and I think that would help with seeing with people what they're scrolling through,
right,
seeing what they're supporting by doing it is going to make a huge difference.
And we've had a lot of progress made
with some of these larger social media presence that used to be fairly critical. We have really turned that around, opened eyes, educated, and we have a lot more positive relationship.
I hope
it stays that way too. With that said, you never know, but
I noticed it being
It is working. It is working, and it is hard work to maintain that relationship to be positive. And I'm happy to put in that work because it is a benefit to me.
I don't know if you might be on there or not, but I'm the neighborhood next door. I'm always jumping on there because there's animal issues continuously
all the time.
And so I'll read a few, and then when it starts to go negative, I'll say, hey, you, and I try to explain it in a very positive, people are working hard, and this is what you can do to help. Contact your county commissioners, ask for more funding, for the more officers to deal with issues and so on. Mm-hmm. So I'm on there all the time.
I do that on the radio.
All positive, trying to promote how you guys are working hard, that the number of animals in our county has ballooned over the last 5 years. And
along with the population, right?
Right.
So
not the animal control officers.
That's
right.
That's true. Staying the same for like what, 20 years?
And I steer. I've been steering away from just being negative and griping to, well, I see that you're upset about this issue. About this is what you can do. This is a contact information to call. Here's what you can do with your neighbor. There's information online, and I just keep going. And my wife's going, you're on there again. But I'm trying to get it to be a positive.
We have tried to re-message with a couple of the bigger social media folks that, you know, when I have one person who's answering 10,000 calls a year, chances are when you call in to report something, you're going to go straight to voicemail because she's already on the phone. So I can't have you say, well, I tried and nobody answered. I need you to leave a message because I guarantee you it will get back to you. So, you know, that's my biggest thing is when people call and they don't get a live body right away, they just immediately hang up and are like, well, I tried and they didn't answer. So that's irresponsible.
So we got about 5 more minutes to go. I do want to say that your presentation last week is very well received, and they talked about it a little bit afterwards. Might be first for you, but we used to have these meetings with Paul Scarpelli a long time ago. He would come regularly.
Yeah.
And we had them, and I think they always still do have a good relationship with Animal Control, partly because of those conversations. So I think you'll be invited more often, and I think it's a good thing for
both
the
Yeah, it is a great thing. And to your point, the advisory board was, I think, underutilized before I got here. And for me, I think it should be, and I'm so glad that we have more members and a diverse group of people with varying opinions and points of view and experiences. And I think that we need to come together and learn and see what we can do to support pet owners and animals in the community. And so part of what I'd like to see this board do is, well, you're supposed to once a year make a presentation to the council to kind of say, hey, look, this is what's going on in the animal community. This is what we would like to see.
Talk us up.
It's just supporting the role that we have and our partners have, right? Because we're all in it together. So I'd love to see that. And then again, like you said, these budget hearings, everybody's asking for money. I mean, it's not me, just me. Everybody, all departments in the county are asking for something. And the legislators, the council members, they have to make a decision. Not everybody gets what they want. So what value and what importance does it have? And unless somebody's speaking up and supporting it, you have a better chance of getting that, $10,000 that you want to send three
animal control officers to the academy, versus if you don't say anything, because they'll be like, well, do you really need that? Somebody else needs that more. So it's making your program important and making your program be valuable, so that if it disappeared, what effect would it have on the community, right? If we didn't have animal control, what would that look like? Oh God, we don't want that to happen, right? Because we value the services and we want to support the mission and the program. I think invited Andrea to, I think it's great to have that support at those hearings when the commissioners start to decide where the money in the county or the general taxpayer dollars should be spent. And maybe, you know, you don't get everything that you want because there is, you know, a hole somewhere else of higher importance to the community. I'm not saying animal control is the most important thing, but we need some help to do something.
Well, it is a public health service. I mean, there's lots of compassion and consideration, but at the heart of it, it's like if it went away, yeah, everybody would feel it.
There's also a division of opinion in the commission about like the verbiage we try to put in. Some people were, hey, this sounds really good, and it just comes up. We don't want to just throw it away. Mm-hmm. So,
right. And all we can do is make a suggestion and a recommendation and back it up with as much relevant information for people to make a decision. I'm not going to like every decision. I already know that. That happens to me all the time. So,
All right. Well, we've got a lot of good work done today and appreciate all the hard work on the hearings, the reviews, and sometimes difficult. And I think we did a very good job and worked together to get good results on that. With that, unless we have anything else to talk about, I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting and look forward to our next meeting in 3 months.
October.
All right.
One second.